We will bring the House Rules Committee back to order, a continuation of yesterday's meeting. Members present, Chenault Olson, Representative Heron, Christ Tompkins, Representative Tuck, and Chair Johnson. Representative Hawker's been excused. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We do make sure that everyone turns off their cell phones. And let the so before us, we have 247 tax credits. I think that all the members have 10 amendments before them. And I would like to make a motion to adopt amendment number one.
Object.
Thank you. And Ms. Delbridge will explain the amendment. This is the technical fix that we all heard about yesterday. She will be able to walk us through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rena Delbridge, Deputy Representative Hawker, and working with you, Representative Johnson, on this legislation. Amendment 1D19 is, again, a technical amendment taking care of a couple drafting problems in version D. First of all, on page 8 of the D version, when we set a three-year transition period for the refundable 35% net operating loss credit on the North Slope, we inadvertently left an or where there should be an and on line 4. And so this has the effect, this amendment, of making sure.
Ms. Delbridge, we have amendment number 1 as D2.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
And although you'll be addressing that shortly, and you're going to have to do it again. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So before us, we have amendment number 1. Ms.
My
Delbridge,
apologies.
That's okay.
Amendment number 1 is D2. And amendment number 1 here restores current statute so that the income tax credits for the in-state refinery and the LNG storage facility will still be refunded from the oil and gas tax credit fund. And then it makes conforming changes to the Alaska Hire provisions in the bill so that those income tax credits are not kind of discriminated against in prioritizing refunds from that fund. This was in response largely to concerns brought by Representative Wilson and the administration, including ADA, that making those credits refundable by appropriation through the Department of Revenue could put their credits at risk in the future. It was never the intent to further risk those credits, and it seemed that they had been more secure coming from the oil and gas tax, coming not from the oil and gas tax credit fund. But the chairman, Representative Johnson, was happy to make this change.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to make sure, I'm going to summarize and make sure I got it right. So we removed those funds, those credits going out from the oil and gas tax credit fund. And so now we're putting it back in there because we discovered that the credit rating for the Department of Revenue may be jeopardized. Am I correct?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, close. There's nothing wrong with the credit ratings for anyone. Making those credits, in the D version, those credits would be subject to refund by the Department of Revenue through annual appropriation. And that Representative Wilson and Ada and others brought concerns that that might be more difficult for them then to receive the refunds due, rather than simply have it come out from the oil and gas tax credit fund as in current statute. So we have reverted to the current statute.
And if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
And what was the purpose of moving it from the oil and gas credit fund in the first place?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, the purpose was fairly genuine. Those are income tax credits, not oil and gas tax credits.
Oh,
and it seemed to be more clear than going into the future, particularly if this legislation passes and one closes out the credits, that there are not continuing obligations coming out of that fund that are, in fact, unrelated to oil and gas tax credits.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is the objection still maintained?
I'll remove my objection.
Thank you. Any other further objections? Amendment number 1 passes. That brings us to amendment number 2, and I'll move amendment number 2.
Object for discussion.
I thought we got off easy. Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Ms. Delbridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I get to go back. Okay. Again, on page 8 of the D version, we are talking now about the provision, the three-year transitionary provision as to who can receive the 35% refunded net operating loss credit on the North Slope. The drafting left an or on line four, which would have said that you can get this transitional credit if you produce less than 15,000 barrels per day on the North Slope in 2016, or if your lease expenditures creating the credit were incurred under a unit plan of development or exploration. It needed to be an and this amendment makes that and. This makes sure that a new unit plan of development by someone that produces even 50,000 barrels a day is not included for purposes of that three-year transitionary measure. Then this amendment also, on page 12 of D, goes into the extension of the Middle Earth credit in the Copper River Basin and adds a notwithstanding B, referring to 4355025B on line 10. Ledge Legal caught this issue, and there are already some qualifications in B. They needed to make sure that that was not wrapped into the new requirements on the extension. And then finally, this amendment restores into the legislation a definition of a qualified capital expenditure, which in several places in statute is used independently of a qualified capital expenditure credit. I believe that Tax Director Ken Alper discussed yesterday an issue where this could have caused an inadvertent reduction in taxes due because it would have potentially eliminated the 30 cents haircut that is received I just lost track. Basically, by restoring the qualified capital expenditure definition, we're making sure that that is not an inadvertent change, and we're keeping statute clear on that level. Tax Director Alper had just alerted me to a conforming or an additional provision required in this amendment. When we drafted this to bring back the qualified capital expenditure definition, we needed to delete the repeal of two statutes currently in D on page 28. And Mr. Chairman, if there is the potential of a amendment to the amendment to add those repeals, I'd be happy to cite those on the record.
Yeah, I think that'd be appropriate. And so if you'd go ahead and put it. Brief at ease. Come back. Let's come back to order. With this, I'm going to set amendment number two aside and give Director Halper.
Talking points on that one.
We will bring the Rules Committee meeting back to order. Before us, in the handwritten version, I have amendment number one to amendment number two. I'd move the amendment. Do I have any objections?
Object for discussion.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
Ms. Delbridge, would it be possible to offer a brief summary of what this amendment to the amendment does?
Representative Christ Tompkins, through the chair, the amendment to the amendment? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, absolutely. So in the original D version, there was a blanket repeal of the qualified capital expenditure, including the definition of that in where it applies in other statutes outside of the credit. We are reinserting now a definition for a qualified capital expenditure into the legislation, largely at Department of Revenue's recommendation, because it does apply to certain provisions in other parts of statute outside of the credit. So in making those changes and reinserting the definition, we had to also put back into those statutes the term qualified capital expenditure, not credit, just expenditure. And in doing so, we had previously repealed in D two provisions.
Rena, could you speak a little more into the mic or move it closer? Thank you.
Certainly. So we repealed two provisions in which qualified capital expenditure was a term used, and now we need to undelete those repeals because we need that term in statute, and now we have a definition that this amendment is also putting back in.
Thank you. I remove my objection.
Thank you. Any further objections? Amendment number one to amendment number two passes. That brings the original amendment before us. Ms. Delbridge?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we have gone through the changes brought by this amendment. Again, it restores that definition of a qualified capital expenditure. It tightens the language in the three-year transitionary refundable 35% NOL to make sure it doesn't go to anyone other than intended here. And then it makes that technical change as recommended by Ledge Legal related to the extension of the Middle Earth credit.
Thank you. Discussion, Mr. Representative Price Tompkins.
I remove my objection.
Okay, thank you. Are there further objections? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number two passes. That brings up amendment number three.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number three.
And I'll object for discussion. Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number three relates to the gross value reduction, and there's been discussion in this committee, but certainly throughout the legislature this session, regarding House Bill 247 about the GVR and its potential, well, its cost to the state right now and its potential future cost to the state is more and more oil becomes GVR eligible. This amendment takes a conservative approach to the GVR, a very conservative approach, and I think it's important for us to maintain a stable revenue source from our oil and gas, and by removing the GVR, makes our statutes a little bit more simple, and I think ensures that our revenue stream will be more reliable and more regular into the future.
Representative Perrin.
So, Representative Price Tompkins, does this create two different GVRs?
Representative Perrin, while I'm tag teaming with the legislator who's amendment who has his name on the amendment, I believe this gets rid of the GVR.
Representative Tuck?
Yeah, that's correct. The intention of this amendment is to just get rid of the GVRs entirely.
But doesn't this still leave the 10% GVR in place?
At this point, I can't answer that question. The 10% GVR to I can't answer that question. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. And I just want to state that we just got this bill 7:30 in the morning before a 9:30 meeting, this committee substitute. We were required to have amendments due by yesterday at 2 o'clock. I apologize that we're not as prepared as normally prepared in some of these amendments, but that was a big ask, and we did what we could. We still have a lot of amendments that we're drafting on behalf of the CS. We were able to get about four that were in Parliament introduced today. I haven't got a chance to double-check to see if these amendments are doing what we hope to be able to do, but just the nature of having something rushed as fast as it's rushed.
Any further discussion on amendment number two? And I will maintain my objection. Will the secretary call the roll? Hang on a sec. Yes, Representative Tuck? I'm sorry, amendment three. I apologize. I need to put my glasses on. So would the secretary call the roll?
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Millett, not present. Representative Price Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Hawker, not present. Representative Perrin?
No.
Chair Johnson?
No.
Two yay, four nay.
So by a 4-2 vote, amendment number three has failed to pass. That brings before us amendment number four.
And I move amendment number four.
And I will object for discussion's purposes.
Basically, what this amendment intends to do is just basically, rather than going for the cuts per barrel credit, the barrel per credit from 0 to 4 rather than 0 to 8.
Representative Any questions of the maker of the amendment? Does this, Representative Tompkins, does this base, this credit basically gives us progressivity as it's replaced, so it's kind of a, at the capital incentivizes spending, so we need that to incentivize spending. Does this eliminate that?
It doesn't eliminate it. There's still, currently there's a progressivity, if you will, factor in that. This just cuts that progressivity in half.
You know, Representative Tuck, this substantially changes our credit system. Although it's not a credit, it changes the overall mechanism, and it's one of the puzzle pieces. And I'm real concerned about, as you mentioned, passing policy without, you know, real deliberative process. I'm not sure this has been heard enough. We do have the floor to take this up, which will give you another opportunity. So at this point, without a thorough vetting and finding out how it fits into the overall tax policy, I will maintain my objection. Representative Herron?
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand this, but I thought the 35% tax rate, let's say, for example, oil goes back to over 100, does that damage that? So, Mr. Chairman, I will ask the maker to withdraw it, and like you suggested, maybe we should look into this and debate it on the floor when the bill, if and when the bill gets to the floor.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I will maintain my objection. Will the Secretary call the roll?
Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Millett, not present. Representative Price-Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Hawker, not present. Chair Johnson?
No.
Two yay, four nay.
So by a vote of 4-2, amendment number 4 has failed to pass the committee. Bring us to amendment number 5. Representative Tuck?
I'm going to withdraw number 5.
Number 5 has been withdrawn. Have segregated into separate piles. I need to move on. Amendment number 6, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move number 6.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
What this will do, Mr. Chair, is limit the refinery tax credits. So basically, it would limit those to the companies that have 51% ownership in Alaska and are headquartered in Alaska. We had testimony when this tax credit went into effect that a company like such as Tesoro wasn't asking for it. They said they didn't need it. And so this is basically will make sure that those who need it can get it, and those who don't really need it don't apply for it just to get some money from the state of Alaska.
Representative Chenault.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, to the best of my ability, I don't believe that there had been any money paid out of that fund since it was enacted. I think we will probably see the first money out of that tax credit spent on a asphalt process for Fairbanks. Mr. Chairman, I represent the Kenai Peninsula. I have Tesoro in my district. Tesoro may not have asked for that, but any improvement that they do to their plan is to a benefit to the state and to the people of the state of Alaska, since they refine the majority of their refined product either goes to the Anchorage International Airport or to consumers along the rail belt and around the state. I know they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on low sulfonyl fuel process for their facility to meet federal requirements. And, you know, as far as a 51% owner, I'm not sure that any of them would beat that. My understanding is it a 51% owner share of the corporation, or is that a 51% owner share of actual Alaskans? I don't know that question, Mr. Chairman, and I believe that what we're trying to do here is pick winners and losers. If the refinery needs that tax credit in order to provide a better product for the citizens of Alaska, then that's what that bill was originally set aside for. It was to help the refineries up north that were struggling with not only being able to produce the product that they needed, but also to provide that product to folks. And I think that we need to, without more vetting of this particular amendment, I think that we need to keep that in place. And like I said, especially, I don't believe anyone has actually applied for any of that other than maybe this asphalt facility up north later on this year. So, Mr. Chairman, I just, if I can't get my questions answered, I know I'm going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Olson.
As a follow-up to what the Speaker said, Tesoro extended the life of Flint Hills by several years by supplying them ultra-low sulfur diesel and kept them from paying $100 million like Tesoro did to meet a federal mandate. It's my understanding it's going to take 20 or 30 years to amortize that because there's not just that, there's not much demand for ultra-low at this point in time.
Thank you, Representative. Any additional discussion? Representative Tuck.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are currently three refineries here in the state of Alaska that would probably be eligible for this. And we won't know until October, I believe, this year on who applies for it and who doesn't apply for it. It was clear in testimony that Tesoro wasn't asking for it. They said they didn't need it. They ended up being included in this. And to answer the question, it is 51% owned by Alaskans on the first page of the amendment. And that would include the two other refineries that are owned by Alaska Natives, Native corporations. ASRC, I believe, has the other two refineries that may end up qualifying for these. Right now, we don't have any way of checking to see if the companies need these. There's no requirement for them to prove that they need these tax credits. But we did hear testimony where one said that, you know, we won't need them. And so what this amendment does is just say that, hey, if we're going to be spending $10 million a year to let's make sure that they're state corporations and that they're not multinational corporations that aren't asking for it in the first place.
Thank you. Further discussion? I will maintain my objection. Would the Madam Secretary call the roll?
Representative Hawker, not present. Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Millett, not present. Representative Price-Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Chair Johnson?
No.
2 yea, 4 nay.
So by a vote of 4-2, amendment number 6 has failed. That brings us to amendment number 7. Representative Tuck.
I'll yield to Representative Price-Tompkins.
Representative Price-Tompkins.
Thank you. I move amendment number 7.
And I'll object for the purposes of the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amendment number 7 relates to refundable or reimbursable tax credits that the state of Alaska pays those who hold those tax credits. Right now, the committee substitute has a ceiling or cap of $75 million in reimbursable or refundable credits that can be claimed or cashed in by the holder of those credits. This amendment changes that cap or ceiling from $75 million to $25 million as the tax credit, subsidy, incentive, choose your word, limit. Basically, we're in a position where we need to limit our exposure and how much we're paying in these credits, subsidies, incentives, et cetera. And this amendment does that.
Thank you. Representative Herron?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the department or the administration testified in the first committee that the $25 million cap was asked, why that number? And I believe the response was that was the 2006 cap. So whether 75 is the right number or not, shouldn't we just adjust for inflation over 10 years or should we stick to the 2006 cap? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you. I guess a clarifying question. Representative Herring, are you suggesting we go back to the 2006 cap, adjust for inflation, and perhaps install that as the new cap on credits?
Yeah, I would at minimum, I would think that we'd want to adjust for that. Again, Mr. Chairman, maybe $75 million is not the perfect number, but it seems like to depend on a 10-year-old $25 million cap seems it's. I just have a question about that. I think we should adjust it at least for inflation.
Yeah. I think Representative Christ-Tompkins.
I would entertain an amendment to the amendment.
I'm not sure you're going to see that, Representative Christ-Tompkins. I think the $25 million cap was an arbitrary number. I think it floated from 200 to 100 to 75 to 70 to 80. I think the 75 is a compromise considerably towards the lower end of all the pieces of legislation we've seen. We heard the industry testify that this bill is a balance. And allowing that money, I'm not sure that it would give the some of the Blue Crest and the Furies an opportunity to continue their work and might seriously damage any investment, future investment. So I'm going to oppose this amendment because I think it undoes some of the balance that we strike in other areas in the bill. So, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I remember correctly, I think this was the original ask with House Bill 247 from the administration, and this brings it back to what the bill originally had in it. We heard testimony last night, and I think that a lot of public members might be confused on all the elements of the CS, but because a lot of public people are don't entirely trust what we're doing here legislatively because we're doing it so fast, that they've asked that we go back to the original version of the governor's bill. And this is just one component that takes us back there. I think a $25 million cap per company limits our liability in going forward, but still keeps the investments here in the state of Alaska, so I'll be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tuck, and I believe if we listened and followed directly the testimony last night, we wouldn't be even having this because zero would be the number. And we have to strike a balance between investment in the future and doing everything we can do to maintain that while not crippling the industry. We certainly need to make adjustments. So I will continue to oppose the amendment. And I will continue to maintain my objection. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll?
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Hawker? Not present. Representative Herring?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Millett? Not present. Representative Christ-Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Chair Johnson?
No.
Two yea, four nay.
So by a vote of 4-2, Amendment number 7 has failed to pass. That brings us to Amendment number 8. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I have just a quick brief at ease?
Brief at ease. I call the meeting back to order. We have before us Amendment number 8. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Amendment number 8.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Okay. Amendment number 8 basically is just setting a 5% minimum tax.
So would you care to explain that a little more in depth, Representative Tuck?
Yeah, we had, I believe the original version of this bill had a 5% minimum tax. There has been some discussions on bringing it down to a 4% minimum tax. But this is just making sure that we're not going to be going upside down our production taxes as we survive through these low oil prices.
Any discussion? I'm going to object to this. I think that, you know, we are trying to strike a balance, and I think that we heard that taking the 4% from 5% would be the equivalent of a North Slope producer laying down a rig for 6 months. So if you multiply that by the number of producers up there, that could be the equivalent of 2, 3, 4 rigs laid down. I think we have to continue to encourage, even in the lowest prices environment, encouraging people to continue to explore. And I think this is probably one of the things that will, as we saw in that decline curve, I think this would increase our decline closer to the 20% than the 4% that is anticipated. So I will object to this amendment. Any other discussion? I will maintain my objection, Madam Secretary.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Chenault.
No.
Representative Hawker, not present. Representative Heron.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Millett, not present. Representative Price Tompkins.
Yes.
Chair Johnson.
No.
2 yea, 4 nay.
By a vote of 4-2, amendment number 8 has failed to pass. That brings before us amendment number 9. Representative Tuck.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair, I'm going to withdraw number 9.
Number 9 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 10. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 10.
And I will object.
This is a local hire provision that has been discussed about making sure that the tax credits go to those, gets prioritized to those who have a local hire. I believe the CS has a version of that right now, but basically what this will do is base it on the amount of man hours versus number of employees. And then it also includes subcontractors in this, contractors and subcontractors. We know that the oil industry themselves, the majors, are doing a really good job at local hire. The problems that we're having is at the subcontractor and contractor level. And so this kind of brings it down to that level, as well as basing it on man hours. So it doesn't matter how many Alaskans are hired versus non-residents. It's based on making sure that Alaskans get to work.
Any other discussion? I'm Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While I'm a firm believer in Alaska hire, I wonder what kind of restrictions this puts on companies or corporations. You know, the current CS we have before us gives preference to corporations that are 80% Alaska hire, gives them priority on the refunds. And my concern is when we start talking about total man hours, is that total man hours worked in Alaska? Is that total man hours that the company has for employees nationwide or worldwide? You know, I don't know what kind of, I do have an idea of what kind of burden that puts on a corporation, especially smaller companies, to physically track every single hour that every employee that works for their company does across the state or across the world. So I don't know what kind of burdens it would be putting on by putting an amendment like this in there. I do like the CS that's currently before us that has the 80%, and I do wish that we could hire more Alaskans. Sometimes that's just not available because the skill set on some of these projects, some of these jobs, Alaskans haven't been trained yet to do. I hope we train them into the future through some of the training programs we have, and we're able to put more Alaskans to work on any of these new jobs, especially with the new technology that's going on. So I just have some unknown concerns about what this actually will do to the ability for corporations to track this and to be able to continue to get the credits that we're providing.
Thank you.
Brief at ease.
Is there further discussion? Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I listened very carefully to what the speaker says, and I share some of those concerns. But I think that, at least from my perspective and the region I represent, is I think there should be more discussion about this, so I am going to support the amendment.
Thank you. I'm going to oppose the amendment based upon I think it's a terrible burden. I can't see someone having to go in and audit their contractors beyond just the work they've done into the number of hours they spend and started getting in individual time cards. And the a contractor makes a mistake or a residency mistake, and the contractor doesn't suffer, but the main business who's applying for this under these credits would. So I'm going to continue to maintain my objection. Will the secretary
can I make a final comment because there's some statements that were made?
Okay, go ahead.
Clarify. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. Oil companies typically don't do their own drilling. They don't do their own pipe building. They don't do any of that. They contract that out. Much the same way that the state of Alaska owns a resource up there. We provide leases. We contract that out to bring our oil to market. And so since we're spending the money, we're making investments, this amendment right here is making a decision that as we move forward in getting our oil to market, that we make sure that we have as many Alaskans hired as possible. And that goes down to the contractor and subcontractor level. Because that's where just recently we had an applicant, a welder, that was trying to apply for a job in the Cook Inlet, and they were requiring this applicant to fly down to Louisiana, an Alaskan, to fly down to Louisiana to get a certified in welding down there rather than being able to do that up here. And it's just an unnecessary burden for Alaskans to do that. The guy's well-trained. He's well-skilled. But this will have the oil companies making sure that their contractors are in compliance with this provision that we have in the CS also. And then again, just basing it on the number of man hours. Now, it's clear in the CS and in the amendment that the applicant's workforce is in the state and looking at it in the previous year. So I think this is, and by having it based on man hours, it makes it to where you are making sure that you're getting Alaskans employed on those jobs, not just hired and on the books for the purposes of getting a tax credit. So I think this cleans things up really well. I don't think it's going to be a terrible burden. We just want to make sure that we have compliance with our contractors and subcontractors when really it's Alaskans should be benefiting from those jobs on the North Slope. I know there's the Texan connection up there. I know that there's huge groups of workers that are flying from the North Slope, stopping in the Anchorage Airport, and then flying on to the Lower 48. This is a provision here to make sure that we police it all the way down to the subcontractor level. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Brief at ease. We'll bring the meeting back to order. We were, I think, under discussion on amendment number 10. Any further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Going into looking at hiring as many Alaskans as possible does create some scenarios, some situations. As we look forward in going into the contractors and subcontractors, trying to see how best that will work. So I will work with other committee members as well as try to get an amendment for the floor that will work overall. So at this point, I will withdraw amendment number 10.
Thank you. Amendment number 10 has been withdrawn, and normally I wouldn't comment on something that's not before us, but I agree with your intent 100%. I think there is a way that we can work it to kind of, refine it a little bit to assist, that I would certainly be willing to any of that. So, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to point out that it was House Bill 308 years ago, your bill, that you had introduced, I think, in 2009, 2010, that attracted me to the provision that you had put in on this. And since then, I have introduced a bill to tried to work on this. One of the problems that we were having as we looked at that was the stair step effect that you would have by just hiring one more Alaskan. That's the reason why we're trying to do something more linear based on man hours, because that does make it more linear. And then also trying to figure out how we can capture a big part of that workforce. I know that ConocoPhillips is doing a really good job. I know BP is doing a good job. Exxon is doing a good job of making sure that those that they hire directly is Alaskans. And they publish that. They are proud of it. And I'm proud that they do that. It's just that subcontractor level is where we're hoping to solve the problem. So we'll continue working on it. But thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the freedom
thank
to
you.
Comment on that.
Thank you. And I do remember 308 quite well. I have no other amendments before us, so that would bring the CS back up before us. Are there briefities? The meeting will come back to order. There are no further committee or no more amendments to discuss. That brings the bill before us. So under committee discussion, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points I want to make. Is that when Senate Bill 21 was passed, there wasn't modeling to take us down to the level of the oil prices that we see today, and so I don't think the administration, the legislature, the public, fully understood what were the ramifications at these low oil prices. We all agree that part of the budget is trying to save money. We're actually making cash payment, subsidy payments to the oil industry for a lot of work that's going on. We did have the Cook Inlet, House Bill 280, I think it was passed in 2010, that jump-started the Cook Inlet. The big question that everybody has is what's the purpose of those tax credits? Are we meeting the purposes of those tax credits? Who's getting those tax credits? And should they be getting those tax credits? And are there people out there that are not receiving tax credits that can really use the tax credits? The problem is we don't have the accurate information to be able to do that. I know the CS does have has a clause in there trying to grab some of that information, but I'm not sure if that information is going to be enough for us in the future to make solid decisions. One thing that the oil industry has been saying is that we need to have certainty. We need to be able to rely on a tax structure that will carry us forward. And we heard that testimony yesterday. 3 points to it. One of them is being durable. One is being, if I can remember correctly, durable, sustainable, and predictable. And so this is our chance to do that. This is a little bit rushed, this CS that came out. A lot of us didn't get a chance to. I know you probably had a chance to exercise it and go through it. I haven't got a chance to exercise and go through it as deeply as I would have liked to, because I've been in committee. And in committee, you really don't get into the details as much as possible. Oftentimes, I don't even know what questions to ask, is because it's moving so fast. We have to have some proper modeling. Our modelers that modeled things for Senate Bill 21 originally passed, you know, we had them over the speakerphone just based on this current CS, but weren't able to have them available to really model any amendment ideas that we may have. And that's what was pointed out in some of the amendments, is that, you know, we don't know. A lot of this stuff is a major, has a major effect, but that's how Senate Bill 21 works. You make a change over here, something pops up over here. You pop this down over here, and all of a sudden it pops up. I mean, there's so many moving parts to it. It's very complex. And to try to get a CS version kicked out in a couple days without having the time to go over it is, I think, a little bit unfair. We definitely, I think it's important that we have a tax structure that's durable at all prices, one that works on all time horizons, making sure that when we compare ourselves to the rest of the world that we're getting our fair share, and making sure that as we move forward that we're meeting our constitutional obligation to maximize the benefit for all Alaskans, and making sure that we are properly rewarding those that are investing in Alaska. And so At this time, I can't support the CS moving out of committee, although I do think it's doing some good things to it. It's not entirely, it may not be entirely what I would like to see, but I'm still trying to figure that out on how much we're changing things and how much it benefits us. So at this time, I'm not going to be able to support the bill moving out of committee.
Additional discussion? Representative Christophe.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Summarizing thoughts from the last couple of days, this bill has been in committee. I get that things are hard. I get that oil prices are low, that this is a real tough time for the industry. And in the face of it, it's pretty impressive what's happening. I mean, the Bluecrest development and Cook Inlet, the Armstrong-Repsol partnership on the North Slope, some of that activity I think is really encouraging. CD5, what Conoco's doing, and BRA. That said, this is obviously a huge puzzle piece in the overall budget picture, and I see no mathematical way to balance the state of Alaska budget if we have a $772 million, I think it is, refundable credit subsidy outlay every year in cash payments. Every year isn't quite fair. I get this is a high watermark. It's projected to come down even if policy stays the same. But, you know, when you're talking about a court system budget that's $100 million and we're talking about a sum of money that's $700 going on $800 million, I just don't, there is no way, and I think that's a factual statement, to close this budget gap without major reform and reduction in these payments and subsidies, which is what this bill does. And I get that, and I get that it's a, you know, a hard-fought compromise. I know how hard that you, Mr. Chair, have worked on this bill, and I think you summarized it pretty well. And I think it was the ADN that you don't like it, and industry doesn't like it, and no one likes it, and it's a tough piece of legislation to carry and put forward. So I'm grateful for the process and this coming forward, even though it's a thankless task. I just think about other industries, and I represent a coastal district. I've got I think more fishing permits in my district than any district in Alaska, and more fishing permits per capita than anywhere in the United States. And so I'm intimately familiar with the economics of that industry. And, you know, right now, salmon prices are in the toilet, proportionally, maybe not to the same degree that oil prices are in the toilet. But so fishermen aren't doing great there. Some quotas are down, certain fisheries, certain species. So that's the equivalent of production. That's down. And, you know, we got a bill to increase effectively the gross tax on fishing, and that sucks. I mean, that's a real kick in the rear for a fisherman. But I get the necessity of that, and I know a lot of fishermen do, even though it's a pretty incredibly bitter pill to swallow. And so, you know, I see that in this sector as well. And, you know, hardening the floor or raising the floor to 4 to 5, just with fishing, we're raising the gross tax from 5 to 6 or 3.5 to 4.5, whichever subtax you're talking about. You know, I think we're sort of all in it together, all sectors sort of sharing the burden of closing this gap. But that's taxes. And on the subsidies and incentive side, that's where I've got a real hard problem, a real big problem. And if there was a tax credit program or an incentive or subsidy program that were paying 20 or 40% of the cost of fishermen to put in new cooler plates in their holds or to upgrade their hydraulic systems or to work on their fiberglass or whatever it might be, and they're getting a cash payment, a reimbursement for 20 to 40% of those capital upgrades that allows them to have a better operation, to hire more crew, to get a better return in the future, to establish themselves more firmly in Alaska. I mean, that's great. That's all good for the economy. It leads to more investment. It leads to more jobs. It leads to more economic activity. But quite simply, we would not be able to afford that program right now. And I would be advocating that we take a conservative approach in curtailing, reducing, or eliminating such a program right now. Such a program doesn't really exist in that form, and certainly the scale of what we're talking about. And on that incentive and subsidy side, I think we just have to take a really hard and difficult look at this outlay that we're paying, because we just can't afford it mathematically. We can't balance the budget with it. And I get this bill takes a big step towards reducing how much we're paying in these subsidies and credits, but I think it's got to be more for us to balance the budget. And I've got a lot of empathy for the industry. Again, impressed with a lot of the activity that's happening, but it just doesn't quite go far enough for me. And again, appreciate all the work of the committee and the chair to get us to this place.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Representative Herron.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the work that you and staff have done on this bill. Of course, the governor introduced it early on, and the first committee was House Resources, which I sit on, and it was a big learning curve. But coming out of that committee, I voted to have it moved from committee, but I voted no recommendation. And then, of course, it's had other stops along the way, including the House floor, where after debate, most likely, the bill would have failed 039 because it basically the House was divided. So now we're back here. There has been a lot of work by groups within the House on a way forward. This is one more step. It has several more stops, but I will vote to move it from committee because we need to get it to the House floor and have another chance at passing legislation that works for most. That's going to be a difficult lift, but I think it's important that this bill get to the floor. Whether it passes or fails is important, but again, appreciate the help. And the only question that I'm going to ask, I'm not going to ask them to come forward, but I will ask them on a sidebar, is the governor introduced a bill to increase exploration activity on the slope, and he wanted to attract 50 independents. So my question to the commissioner will be is, does this version, does that hurt or help that expectation that the governor had the first day? And does this bill does it bring anybody else to the table, or is one of the majors going to be the only one left up there exploring? So a lot of questions, and I guess I would commend you on having this bill create a lot of questions that need a lot of answers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Representative Olson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't believe I've seen anything resembling a perfect bill all session, and I'd put this one on the list. There's something in it for everybody to dislike, but I will be supporting it.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, I had a perfect bill at one time. I don't remember what it was, but I've had one at one time. Mr. Chairman, I think there's something in here that everybody doesn't like. We're in hard economic times. We've seen the bottom drop out of the oil market, in which we receive better than 80% of our revenue. We need to address the issue, but we also need to look at Alaska's future, Mr. Chairman, and Alaska's future will be fairly bleak if we don't continue to have investment in the industry that pays the bills for the state of Alaska. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to try to clear up some of the things that I continue to hear over and over, and I was thumbing back through all my papers trying to find a number, but I thought the number of tax credits that were due this year were about $775 or $773 million. That number is thrown out there that every year we're going to be paying that. Well, Mr. Chairman, $200 million of that, $775 million, are tax credits that we did not pay last year. So there are not actually credits that were acquired this year, we're just paying what we owe. And while $575 million in any one of our checking accounts would be a substantial amount of money, it still is in the state's pocket. We need to be very careful on how we craft this legislation to try to save Alaskans as much as we can on the credits, but also try to make sure that we continue to get the investment that we need to continue production of oil for when the price of a barrel of oil goes back up. If we don't do that, you're going to see less production. You continue to hear the industry talk about they're going to do what they have to do. They're going to do what's good for business. They're going to, if we tax them another $20 million, they're going to do what they have to do. Whether that's lay down a rig, lay off more employees, make smaller or no investments, that's what they're going to do. They're business people. And so I think we need to be careful on how we approach this thing. Like I said, there's something in here that nobody likes. All of us could probably vote against this bill today and not feel bad. But it's an attempt to try to get a compromise to a floor that we can get, as Representative Olson and Representative Herron said, 21 votes to be able to move this bill across to the other side and see what kind of work they can do and see if we can come to a conclusion on this. So, Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important that we do our business. I think it's very important that we listen to Alaskans. And I think it's important that we continue to move this bill forward to try to come to a compromise.
Thank you. I'm going to take a brief of these. Thank you. Come back to order. Thank you for the comments. I want to address a couple of things that have been said. First of all, there's nothing in this bill that's new. I think first, a couple, 3 weeks ago, it was introduced, some changes, some compromises. We've tried to reach across the aisle and bring as many people on board as we can. This is the product of many, many conversations and hours from both sides, the administration. Is it perfect? No. I think I've said repeatedly on the record that most people would probably find something in this bill that they don't like. But it's time to bring it forward. As the Speaker said, it's time to break the logjam. It's time to move forward, pass or fail, win or lose. We need to not have this be a roadblock into finishing up this session. To address some of the comments, Analytic was never asked to do any modeling on any amendment. So they were standing by. And other than that, I don't think that I've never seen a bill move more slowly than this. Everybody's saying it's being rushed through. Well, we've been 4 weeks on it. And multiple discussion. None of the concepts are new. They're all policy calls, and those are always they're not always black and white. That's part of the problem with the system we have. But I think it's time that the legislature acts. I believe that if we were to take every penny that the oil companies made, we would not close the budget. But the $4 billion budget would still be out there. So we can't take enough. So what we have to look at is what's the balance, and I think that's where we are right now. So with that, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd like a motion, I would move to report House Bill 247 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
There is an objection. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the fiscal notes that you'd like to see attached?
The attached fiscal note would be identify our HB 247 CS rules, DOR tax 51016, and I think the component number is that would be the identifier, and HB 247 rules, fund cap 51016.
Okay, I just want to talk. I want to talk about the latter, just real quick. Looking at this fiscal note, looks like it's $1.75 billion, drafted, looks like, by you, Representative Johnson. The fiscal note capitalizes an oil and gas tax credit fund of $1.75 billion from the Constitution Budget Reserve Fund. This appropriation is expected to be sufficient to fully pay out tax credits have already been earned and what they earn, and that will be earned during the phase-out period of the bill shown in the table. This significantly puts adds to the bill. Just taking a look at this provision right here, so. I'm going to object to the attachment of 2894, the OMB component number 2894, to the House Bill 247, House Rules Fund Cap, dated 5/10/16.
Okay, so there is an objection to moving the fiscal note.
And it, I don't know if it's appropriate. Can I move to split the question on the two fiscal notes?
I think if you just make a motion to eliminate the one, if you, the other one can go
sure.
on without it. So if you'd make that motion.
I make the motion that we only accept House Bill 247 CS Rules Department of Revenue's fiscal note with the OMB component number 2476 and to withdraw the House Bill 247 fiscal note House Rules OMB component number 2894.
Okay. Thank you. Basically, what this does is it funds all of our credits that we are owed, and there are no more after this. But some, in some form or fashion, we have to pay those, and this is the, asked to be an appropriation of the CBR so that we can get them off the books, and there will be no further appropriations after this on a year-to-year basis. So this is kind of lumping it into one sum, but I do not have a problem with the motion. And quite frankly, I'm not going to object to it. We can take it up at a future date. So any are there further objections? So hearing no further objections, we will withdraw the rules, fund cap 51016. And Mr. Speaker, would you...
You want me to make another motion, Mr. Chairman?
No, I think the motion is... Just please, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to report House Bill 247 as amended out of committee with a individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. That note being OMB component 2476.
Are there objections? Hearing, seeing none, HB 247 passes out of committee. Is there any other business to come before the committee? Questions, Representative Price Tompkins?
Not even non-questions.
Okay, thank you. This meeting is adjourned.